Introduce the first speaker, came in from Pittsburgh today. His name is Walt Z.
My name's Walt and I'm an addict.
Hey, Walt.
My clean date is 4-2 of 99. And I don't say that to boast. My sponsor told me if I don't remember the last time I used, maybe I haven't used for the last time. You know, and I keep that very vigilant within my recovery and within my own head. Because that's not a direct reflection of how long I've been around this fellowship. You know, because at one time, you know, that memory got real clouded and I forgot where I came from and left here. You know, and only by God's grace and mercy was I able to find these rooms again. You know, because my pride and my ego would not allow me to get off that corner and ask for help. Only through a train wreck of sorts that we run into in these rooms. And I'm listening to people share their experience, strength, and hope that it took a divine intervention for me to make my way back here, you know, because I was stuck, you know. I was stuck on that corner, you know, over on 8th and Crack Way from where we're at, and I was stuck over there at 108 pounds, didn't care what I looked like. I shouldn't say that. The only thing I did care what I looked like was my hair. As long as my hair looked good, I thought I was okay. You know, and it didn't matter, you know, if I stunk and you could smell me 3 blocks away. Because at the end of the road of coming back in here, I don't forget the desperation that took place in my life at that point. You know, when I took them pants off and they stood up by themselves and I had to use water to peel my underwear off my ass. I don't forget that today. You know, it's that desperation and that vivid memory of that desperation that keeps me seated right where I'm at, because I don't want to go back to existing. It wasn't living. It was existing and waiting to die, you know, and that's as plain as it was. You know, I want to thank the committee for giving me an opportunity to come here and share, not taking a risk on me, because the person who asked me knew he wasn't taking a risk. You know, he knew what he was going to get when he asked me, and we sat and talked about it for a while, and he asked me if I had a preference on what I wanted to share on. And I said, that's not my choice. You know, that's this committee's choice, and that's a God of my understanding's choice. I just get an opportunity to show up and be a tool and carry the message. I don't get to take credit for this. I carry the message just like so many others carry the message throughout the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, and it's a clear NA message. And I'm a firm believer in that. I was rather enjoyed the interview over the phone that took place. That's never happened before. You know, even in our area back in Pittsburgh, you don't get interviewed over the phone when you get picked to do a workshop. That was pretty neat. You know, I found that really awesome. But I want to thank the guys who took the journey with me to come up here, too. You know, I've really enjoyed the time that I've spent on the road with them and enjoy the time that I spend with them, period. You know, and really enjoy the time with the people I've met since I've been here. You know, because one thing I ain't mistaken about is there are no strangers in the rooms of NA, just friends I haven't met yet. You know, and I'm a firm believer in that. You know, when Wayne asked me to share on this topic, it's something that I'm very passionate about. You know, my sponsor just drilled me and drilled me and drilled me that first year of my recovery. You know, there were a lot of times my sponsor and his sponsor, you know, we'd get together and I never knew where I was going. They said, look, be on this corner with your bag. I said, where are we going? They said, that's not important. Just be on this corner with your bag. We're going to a convention somewhere. I'd end up in Columbus. I'd end up in Detroit. You know, I end up in Texas on a retreat for a week where we get in a van, 8 of us, and drive down to Texas and do a weekend retreat down there and then drive back, having meetings all the way down there and back. And it is awesome. And you want to find out about yourself, get stuck in a van with 8 other people, whether they're male or female. You'll find out a lot about yourself along the way. You know, just when you think you got it all together, you'll find out you don't. And it's a really neat journey, and one I'm gratefully appreciative of, you know, because I wasn't that person, you know, just like anyone else when I came in here. Look, the financial part was gone. The spiritual part was gone. The only thing that was left standing was the physical part, and on some days it wasn't even standing. It had to sit down, too. And I came in here, you know, death would have been a great alternative for me, because everything else felt like it was dead inside me. You know, and that the spiritual part wasn't there for a long time. And I remember after being around here for about 60 days, coming back in here in 99, that I woke up one day, you know, and didn't feel the need to use. Did not feel like I wanted to use for the first time since I had gotten back here after 60 days. And I remember calling my sponsor and telling him there's something totally wrong. And he said, there's nothing wrong. He said, if you get nothing else out of this program, losing the desire to use is one of the greatest gifts you'll get. Me, I had to go look for it. You know, I went looking for what was wrong with me and didn't realize that it was a God of my understanding who had removed that obsession and compulsion to want to use. I'm not saying the thought doesn't come here and there, but I don't have to act on it today neither. You know, and I'm truly grateful for that too, because look, this journey started out as a kid at 7 years old who was stealing his dad's smokes, who someone told him they rolled their own smokes. I just didn't know it was marijuana laced with angel dust, you know, at the age of 7 years old. And it went to alcohol at the age of 9 years old. And by the time I was 12, look, I was learning how to freebase cocaine. You know, by the time I was 18 and going into the Navy and signing up for 4 years and only staying 14 months, because that's all the longer this disease would allow me to stay before all my attitudes, ideas, and behaviors kicked in. You know, those first 3 weeks of boot camp were like a detox period, and I thought I was just sick. I thought I had the flu because I was getting it in all day long, you know, and couldn't honor a commitment that it talks about in this fellowship. You know, that commitment and taking the action afterwards, I couldn't do that. That wasn't even part of my vocabulary. You know, my whole mindset the whole time growing up and even into adulthood was, look, I didn't ask to come into this world. You brought me here, now it's your responsibility to take care of me. Why should I have to take care of myself? You know, you guys had the wonderful idea of bringing a child here. And I didn't understand for a long time how distorted that thinking was and how sick it kept me. How much I was putting the blame on everyone else, but didn't want to take the responsibility for my own actions. Didn't want to understand, nor did I ever hear anything about the disease of addiction. You know, everybody I hung around with was getting high all day long. I didn't know anybody that was clean. I didn't know anybody that had found a new way of life or anything. You know, they may have gotten a job, and that was the only kind of new way of life they were getting, but that was about it. You know, it was about, you know, how can I get it, you know, and what corner did I need to go to? Because I stayed in a little circle for a long time until I finally got this little hoopty and decided I wanted to travel. And when that broke down, I left it on the side of the road and kept going. You know, it didn't matter. You know, I'm getting a letter in the mail that they got this car and it's impounded. So what? That's not my concern right now. You know, you're not calling me, telling me where I can get it. And I just left it there. Numerous vehicles, too. From Carnegie to Pittsburgh to McKeesport to DeVosburg and different places around our area. And you know what? When this opportunity presented itself in 99, after being out there for 6.5 months, because I was that guy who didn't want to work any steps the first time around here, at 13 months my sponsor had passed away, holding my hand, asking me how I'm doing from the wreckage of his past. And once again, you know, like I was when I was 5 years old and had lost a sister in a house fire, once again I was pissed at God. How could you do this to me? You put somebody in my life to try to show me some direction that I care about, and now you want to take them away too. It's a hell of a thing holding on to a resentment around this fellowship. You know, and went back out using, you know, at 22 months, standing in a bar drinking Pepsi, shooting pool, and checking out the honeys. You know, and not necessarily all in that order. But in the 25 months, you know, it just happened to be his birthday, the bar owner, and mine too. When I realized what I had done over the next 3 days in using and realized I hadn't bought enough to kill myself yet, I was stuck once again in that hopeless dilemma. You know, stuck once again not wanting to live or with or without the dope. And it existed, you know, for the next 6.5 months. I started out in this apartment, and it was an apartment the first month. You know, after that first month, though, things got rough, and it became that abandominium without any electricity, without any gas, me sneaking in the basement door while he padlocked the front door, you know, still trying to hold on to those frivolous things that I thought were really good about me. You know, didn't realize that I hadn't looked in the mirror at the person who was in there for a long, long time, as long as my hair looked good. And it went throughout that process like that. And I remember being towards the end of the road there in 99 and being on my knees and just asking God to take me out of here, show me a new way to live. What I didn't know and didn't realize at that time, he had already shown me a new way. I was just too ignorant to work it. You know, that part of identification and sharing that it talks about in what is the Narcotics Anonymous program is that, you know what, there were some people who were sharing, but I wasn't identifying with because I had other agendas going on up here. The committee was forming a plan, and I was willing to participate in it. To all extremes and to all lengths that it needed to go. And when that process started happening, when I was able to come back in here, April 2nd of 99, because I was clean on the 1st, but I wouldn't come back in here. I didn't want my clean date to be associated with April Fool's Day. I didn't know I was the fool that was still out there. You know, the one still walking around in non-existent state that when I walked back into the rooms, you know, there was a guy who was there to hug me. And he's my sponsor today, and he said, "Welcome back, kid." I didn't even know he knew me. I didn't allow anyone to get to know me around here. You know? Yeah, it may have been a fellowship and society of men and women for whom drugs had become a major problem, but Walt was sticking off by himself in the corner somewhere and not letting people get to know who he was, you know, because the first thing I had heard when I went to open up my mouth in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting after coming out of a 28-day program and scared as hell was, "Look, if we want to know where to cop, we'll send you. Better yet, just sit still, because you'll probably get beat anyways." And that's what I heard. And after that, you know what? I just said, "F it." I didn't want to share no more. I stuck to myself, you know, talking to my sponsor once in a while and, you know, telling him I think I'm ready to do the 4-step at about 6 months clean. And he looked at me and he said, "Really?" He said, "What about those first three?" I said, "Well, I think I live those on a daily basis. You know, never picking up the pen to write." And him telling me, you know, "Okay, what about the first step?" I said, "Well, my life's definitely unmanageable. You know, I'm staying at my dad's house again." And he started laughing again. And he said, "Well, what about the second step?" I said, "Well, I know I got to be restored to sanity because I ain't standing out there doing what I'm doing anymore. You know, And he said, "Well, what about the third step?" I said, "Well, just for today, maybe I'll turn it over. How about that?" And he just looked at me and said, "Well, you know what? Maybe you just need to keep coming back." And then I did. And this program has truly saved my life. You know, one thing I understand today on another level, on a spiritual level, is that I had gotten so far away from any kind of spiritual connection in my life through active addiction, that there was no way in hell somebody could have told me I could be clean today. There was no way in hell. You know, but there were some men and women who believed that, you know what, because this had worked in their life, it could work in my life. There were some men and women who took some time when I got back here to emotionally invest in my recovery without any strings attached. That weren't looking to do a drive-by through the night, you know, weren't looking to get what they wanted out of this, but were so freely able to share and help an addict who was in desperation without any motives. And it blew me away because everybody I've always run into had motives one way or another. What's in it for you? You know, and when I found out that nothing was in it for them, you know, that they were carrying the message that was so freely carried to them, it blew me away. You know, because I could never have a relationship with a female on a conversational level. It was always taking it to that level of the bedroom, smoking a cigarette when I was done and asking, "So, tell me a little bit about yourself." You know, it was never about any kind of conversation before that. And I'm real grateful today that, you know what, not only did those women take some time to invest in an addict like me, because I had distorted thoughts and distorted beliefs when I come into this fellowship, they took the time to shape and mold me and teach me what it was like to treat a person of the opposite sex with some dignity, respect, and some compassion and caring and some integrity. And for that, I will be forever grateful. Because the way I was raised growing up, you know, my grandmother had a wonderful name for me by the time I was nine. And my grandfather and father had already, you know, had that wonderful name too. And that was a whoremaster. You know, she said, you're falling in a long line of them. And you know what? I took that persona on for a while. Because I was taught three things growing up. How to work hard, how to fight hard, and how to have heart. You know, and didn't realize that those were some misconceptions that I was learning to live. That I was becoming what I was being told. And didn't realize when I got here, I brought that in here with me too. Those old attitudes, ideas, and behaviors. Those illusions that needed to be smashed along the way. That, you know what, it ain't that way. It ain't got to be that way. And we ain't going to put up with it that way. You know, and they took the time to teach me those things. You know, there's a part in our process right here that it says our process of it is identification, hope, and sharing. The heart of NA beats when two addicts share their recovery. What we do becomes real for us when we share it. You know, regardless of where the meeting takes place, we remain unaffiliated. Our program is a way of life. You know, I love this book. It talks about the concerns itself with the nature of recovery. If you're an addict and have found this book, please give yourself a break and read it. That was the one constant thing I kept hearing throughout this process, was to give myself a break. Quit reaching back in the closet, pulling out another bat that was a little bit bigger. My sponsor started introducing me to the steps. Started telling me there was some freedom in the steps. You know, the only concept I could see was the three steps I was walking up to get into that meeting or walking down to get out of that meeting. And now, but I started working those steps and some things started to change in my life. You know, I stopped worrying about my hair so much and started worrying about the person who was growing from the inside out and started realizing that this is an inside job. And if I don't start addressing that inside job, I'll be addressing some outside issues somewhere else. You know, and realizing that, you know what, I kept seeking that joy through one relationship or another and didn't know that it was already within me and just had to learn how to bring it out. Started to treat some people with some compassion and care and tolerance and, you know, and some humility and learning that along the way and just learning to accept some things I couldn't change because I always wanted to control something. I always thought I was in control and didn't even have a clue what it meant. You know, had no clue. And in the neighborhood I grew up in, it wasn't about surrendering. I sure wasn't going to tell anybody in my neighborhood that, hey, look, you know, my self-esteem's a little down today. That wasn't happening. You know, I grew up in an Italian family that was racially mixed in a black neighborhood. It wasn't happening that way. You didn't go out on the street corner, go out on a playground and tell somebody you were feeling a little down today. You know, because you'd be liable to fight the whole crowd that was sitting there with you. And you'd still be playing ball later, you know, but it was just part of that. And, you know, my mom passed away about 16 months ago. And the first time around this fellowship when I had a year, I had to put her into a psychiatric unit on Mother's Day. It was the hardest thing for me. My family wanted to kill me. But I didn't want to watch my mother die. You know, and the neatest thing about it was when she passed away 16 months ago, she left here with more clean time than me. That was cool. That's a blessing that I've gotten around this fellowship. The opportunity to live without the use of any mind, mood altering chemical. The opportunity to take an opportunity to show someone else how this works today. The privilege and honor of saying, you know what, this ain't all about me. I ain't got no money, so what? Let's go anyways. You know, that's what was so freely shown to me around here. My sponsor's always asking me, you know, you're going somewhere, are you taking a newcomer with you? Are you taking somebody who isn't so privileged to have that opportunity to go? Don't forget where you came from. Narcotics Anonymous has paid a debt for you. Are you willing to pick up that debt and take some responsibility for it? I can never repay the debt that Narcotics Anonymous has paid for me, but I will continue to try. I will continue to try. You know, it was real different coming back here to Ocean City. You know, I ain't been back here in 8 years, and the last time wasn't a very vivid memory of me being here. You know, I was telling the guys this morning, you know, I was pointing out the corner where I was laying down face down in the middle of the street 8 years ago, and numerous run-ins with the enforcement people around here and that, and asked not to come back here. It's pretty neat. There have been quite a few places I've been asked not to come back to. And, you know, one thing I understand today is that I continue to do the footwork, and God continues to take care of the outcome, with or without my permission. You know, and I'm grateful for that because, you know, my sponsor always continues to tell me a grateful addict will never use. And it's not about what I say. Watch how I live. You know, I have a friend of mine who always shares, don't ask me how I'm living. Come home and ask my wife. You know, I stay with my dad right now, and you can come home and ask him. I'll give you directions. You know, I'm okay with that. I get an opportunity on a daily basis to carry this message, whether it be through these rooms, you know, whether it be through my job. And some days those weeks can run 70 to 80 hours on my job. But I believe that, you know what, that spark of hope and that flame of desire that is planted within someone needs to be fanned. It does not need to be extinguished. And I believe that if this can work for me, it can work for anyone. But the thing about it is, am I willing to invest some time in someone else that someone so freely invested in me? That's a heck of a question that's being asked around our area right now back in Pittsburgh. You know, and it's one of the hot topics at our region right now. You know, why aren't you investing the time in someone like somebody freely invested in you? You know, I want to thank the committee for giving me an opportunity to come here and share. And I'm really glad this is on Friday at 1:30 so I can go and enjoy the rest of the convention too. You know, that's pretty awesome. But I want to thank the opportunity. Thanks.
All right. An addict named Pat. I'd like to introduce our second speaker at this time from Silver Spring, Maryland. Is that? His name is Robert F.
Hi, everybody. My name is Robert. I'm an addict.
Hey, Robert.
Real nice to be here. I love coming to Ocean City. I have some of those same kinds of memories. I think I was on the wrong side of the road coming down the highway one time in Ocean City. I came to the Narcotics Anonymous program because somebody thought that I had a drug problem. I didn't think that I did. I thought my life was manageable and that I had already decided that this is how my life was going to be, and I would just live as long as I could. And then whatever would happen, because we all have to die sometime from something. But I came here and I found out that it is possible that you can live and enjoy life without the use of drugs, that you can associate with people who believe the same thing, that they could also live and enjoy life without the use of drugs. So I came in here, and I was somewhat against my will. I was in denial over the fact that I was even an addict. I had a perception in my mind of what an addict was, and I did not think that I was one of those. It didn't take very long for me to figure out that I belonged here. My very first meeting, I heard the words that 1,000 was too many, that one was too many and 1,000 never enough. And I identified with that immediately. I identified with the emotions that Walt just spoke about. And I've been able to have many conversations with many people here. And they understand that, you know, how I feel. I know what you mean. I know you mean. I know you know what I mean. You know, we understand each other. And it's described in our literature as the therapeutic value of one addict helping another. What I also liked about this program was that it was very clear what the motives were. The traditions are very closely tied to the reading of what is the Narcotics Anonymous program. We have but one primary purpose. We're here to carry the message. We have no dues or fees. Anyone may join us. You know, that we can meet regularly, freely and openly, and we can help each other stay clean. And this was a concept that was foreign to me, but I liked it because there was no confusion. There was no ducking out the back door. There was no, this doesn't apply to me. I don't belong here, so I can go. But what happened was, once I started going to meetings on a regular basis, I found out that this could work for me too. I got hope from that very first meeting, that other people knew how I felt, and they knew that they could bring me in, and that if I sat down and started paying attention, I would be able to get that same good feeling. I came in looking at the floor, didn't want to be there, had no money, my life had been taken away from me. When I was sentenced, if you will, to go to a treatment center, to go to these meetings on a regular basis, and you needed to do something about your life. And what I did was surrender. I did admit that I had a problem. I admitted that I was powerless, and when I knew that one was too many, I knew what it was like to have the obsession and compulsion to use, to think about using all day, to get and use as much as I could, as often as I could, and more importantly, that once I started that process, I couldn't stop. And the people that were in this program knew that. They also told me that we weren't interested in what or how much you used, who your connections were. So that we all got here for whatever reasons, you know, whatever brought us here to whatever low, bottom, high, bottom, whatever, we all came here because we needed to be here. And that I didn't have to identify out. Again, we identified with the same feelings. Some people's drugs made them sleepy, some made them go. Some made them visualize things that weren't even really there. I was talking on the way down here today about how I used to sometimes go fishing and, you know, with some of the substances that I took while I was doing that. You know, well, the water looked pretty good when I did that. And like everything else, that was sort of my motive. I had some other reason why I was going, but really it was about getting and using and finding ways and means to get more. I would go fishing. I would go play on a ball team. I would play in a band. I would do these number of things, these activities, but really what it was a way to get out of the house, someplace to say I was going, but I always had a cop before I got there. Or I got there and just, I never knew. It was an adventure. You know, I never knew where that adventure was going to take me. But what I found out later on is I found out where it took me. It was very specific. My world became very small. I was using either by myself or with very few people in a very confined environment. And it wasn't fun anymore. It used to be fun, and I wanted to be the life of the party, and I was having a blast. But it no longer became fun. And when my life was reduced to such a small particle, that I needed to get some help. And I think that's where the surrender came. And I came here and I found out what this was all about. My denial continued for a little while because I said, I don't think this is going to work. If I go to a meeting for an hour tonight, how in the world is that going to make me feel better? How in the world will that keep me from wanting to use again? And like it's often said, keep coming back. So I came back. And when I heard something that I liked, I came to meetings on a regular basis. I got a list out. We were very fortunate in this region to have many, many meetings. And I can go anywhere I want at just about any time of the day and find a meeting. And I got to the meeting and some people gave me a hug. And I thought, well, this is all right. You know, I didn't mind that. I've heard people talk about it. Oh, don't hug me. I guess I needed it. I guess I was starving for some kind of real love. And I felt it. And I really did. So I started coming to meetings on a regular basis, and they suggested that I, you know, get some literature, read this blue book here, try this, get a sponsor. And I said, well, who's a sponsor? And they said, well, somebody who has something that you want, somebody who seems to have it going on in their life, and they're happy in their life, and they're really living this program. So I asked someone to be my sponsor, and he helped me by giving me some assignments, and I went home, and I did some reading, and we looked up words in the dictionary, and we wrote them down, and we talked about our experience, and we shared our experience together on those steps. And It's, you know, it came to me that, you know, maybe this is going to be all right. I'll give this a shot for a little while. I had about 3 months, somewhere between 3 and 6 months clean, and I was not happy. I thought, I haven't used in a while. Everyone tells me this is going to get better, and it really wasn't getting any better. It had, but it felt to me, I woke up crying. I woke up in the middle of the night, soaking wet, the pillow, and all over the place, and I thought, boo-hoo, and all over the place. Why is this happening? Why isn't it getting any better? So I talked to some people the next day, and I went to meetings, and they said, keep coming back, and I kept coming back, and, you know, I worked my way through that. I started to get a little more faith, you know. I started to believe in a power greater than me. I thought that God in my life would start to help me. My concept of God as a child was much different than this. It was represented in a place of worship with religious symbols, and it was a routine. It was something that we practiced. It was repetition. And it wasn't that God is here to help me. If I ask God for his guidance and his help, he will help me. God will put people in my life. God will give me the strength that I need to be able to get through those times when I didn't think I was going to be able to do it by myself. And it started to work, and about right on time when I started working on the second step. All of that stuff just sort of fell into place. It all happened for me at the right time. I started to believe that, and I could certainly remember what the insanity was, but I started to believe that this was really going to work for me if I would become honest, if I was open-minded, and if I was willing to do whatever it took to stay clean and get focused and get some people in my life. The people who had associated with me before were gone. They were all gone. They stopped calling. I didn't have their numbers anymore. My wife actually would screen all the phone calls. It was before we had caller ID, and she would grab that phone before I could to find out who it was calling, whether it was my old friends or maybe one of my new friends or somebody that she knew that would be okay for me to talk to. Even some of my family were people who I was not allowed to speak to because they were people that I used with. I started coming on a regular basis, and I started to move on with the steps, and I was able to start taking a real good look at myself. And at some point, I realized that this is going to be all right, and I was going to be okay with this program, and I got involved in service. Service is a very big part of Narcotics Anonymous. I've been very blessed to be able to have the opportunity to work on this particular convention, to go to other conventions, to travel, and experience a lot of things that were not even possible before, because I was so confined in my addiction. Service at a group level, service at the area level, the regional level, and on subcommittees and committees, and one-on-one with other with people that I sponsor. And all of those things, I have an opportunity to sometimes look at myself through other people, see how other people perceive me, and to be, get away from my own self-centeredness, my own self-obsession, and sometimes do something that I don't want to do, something that seems maybe it's inconvenient, but maybe I'll just go ahead and do it anyway. And it usually turns out to be the best thing for me. It's very easy to get in my car and go anywhere I want, you know. I maintain my car, I pay my bills, I have a credit card, you know, I can do all these things. And sometimes it's not that easy for other people. Sometimes people in the fellowship need more help than that. Sometimes people have difficulty reading and they need some further explanation. It was an embarrassment for me when I first came here because I had no money. I had no money because I spent all my money. And the intervention took what I did have left away. I was no longer in control of that. I was taken off the credit. I had no credit cards. I was taken off the checking account, and we had no savings account. And the IRS was interested in where my money was, too. So we had penalties and interest and lots of things coming up. And I was very fortunate to have someone in my home who would be able to take the bull by the horns and settle me down. And that was another part of my surrender. And financial unmanageability was a big problem for a very long time. And to this day, we have the same arrangement in our household. I'm given a certain amount of money as necessary, and my paycheck is direct depositive. I have the proper amount withheld so that when the IRS needs the money today, I'm okay. My taxes were done a couple of months ago because I was not responsible for doing the income tax. Somebody else was, and it was taken care of. I've always believed that I'm very responsible at that because I believe I'm responsible in every aspect of my life, but this is not always true. It's just that I think I am. So, but I like to be reliable. I like to be prompt. And, you know, even on this convention, I was trusted with large sums of money in a checkbook at one time, which seemed awfully amazing to some people. But, you know, in this fellowship, we give each other an opportunity. We give each other the opportunity to fail or to succeed. And, you know, when given that opportunity, what do I do about it? You know, when I say I'm going to show up, I show up. You know, I'm here today. I was told weeks ago that this is the date and time and place. Could you be there? And I said yes. The person who asked me was my grand sponsor, as a matter of fact. So I guess he figured that I could be depended upon. But, you know, someone was coming to pick me up this morning. He came right when he said he was going to be, and I was ready. And we went to pick up somebody else, and he was ready. You know, and then you can't anticipate the backup at the Bay Bridge. You can't anticipate a lot of things, you know. But you can leave early enough to allow for enough time. And, you know, you can get to the places that you need to get to. I've been very responsible in taking on service commitments in my home group and other groups. I've served my group. I've served groups in every capacity, different positions. I've served on subcommittee and area service, and again, I've worked on the convention too. And it was a grueling experience to work on this convention, and I know the work that goes into it, and I'm real grateful to be a part of this. I remember coming to my first convention, and I was just in awe of the whole thing. I just couldn't believe it, and I never thought that I would be at this side being able to carry a message of recovery. We had a discussion today about what does it really mean to, what does this expression mean when you say we can only keep what we have by giving it away? And I thought about that for a while, and I don't know. What does it mean? Well, you can all answer it. If you want to shout it out at one time, go ahead. But I think it's about carrying the message. You know, I think that there were some people who got clean before me, and they came here and they stayed here, and they helped me when I came. And I'm so grateful for those people that they didn't get better, get their lives back in order, have that obsession to use taken away and learn how to live a new life. They don't have that desire to use anymore, but they still have the desire to come to meetings. They continued to be grateful and give back to the program because when they got here, somebody was helping them. It took a long time for this fellowship to grow. You know, it's been here since 1953, but much of this literature wasn't written until way later. And I know a lot of people who got clean in 1988. I don't know what happened in 1988. I didn't get clean then. I got clean in 1996. And I've been coming to this convention every year since then. It's my ninth convention, and it's a miracle. And I've been able to come every year since. But to carry that message, to give it back, to it freely given to me. And it's still confusing, though. How do I actually keep it, you know? But I have the opportunity to stay clean because the meetings are still existing. This convention used to be held in a very small place. I think there might have been 300 people at the first convention, and, you know, and now it's thousands of people that come here. We needed a place, a bigger place. The fellowship's been growing. I was at a meeting the other night that was an anniversary for a number of different people, and I think because of that, there was a lot of people there. And we set up the chairs in that room in sort of a square around the room. This particular night, it was three deep. And when we circled up at the end, I mean, we were three deep all the way around the room. And someone during the meeting even shared, and I was thinking it myself, that this has a convention feel to it. And what I was thinking in my mind was, God, if we're all in here, is anybody out there still using anymore? Look at all of us. Then I thought, oh, I know what it's going to be like here tomorrow night when we circle up. We do a clean time countdown, and we do state recognition, and we talk about where everybody's from. And then is there anybody that's still out there using? Think so? Probably. I don't know. I'd like to think that they were all in here and be a nice, clean environment, but I don't know. But what I do know that I need to stay here. I need to continue doing what I'm doing so that I can stay clean, so I can keep what I have. And that means these cool T-shirts that I get at conventions and these nice clean jeans and a phone book in my back pocket with tons and tons of phone numbers in here. I'm going to keep what I have, and the only way I can do that is by giving it away. That's to help a newcomer, to help the addict who still suffers, and he or she is not always the newcomer. There are times when I need help. There are times that my friends that have 10 and 15 and 20 years are here, and they need help. They need my help. They need the help of one another. And nobody ever told me that the only person that can help me is somebody that was here before me. I'm grateful to them because they were here, because had they all gone away, I'd have been shit out of luck when I got here, because there was nothing else going to work. There was no medicine, religion, and psychiatry. None of that was going to work. None of that works like this does. So when I came here thinking that coming to a meeting for an hour a day, it wasn't going to work, I found out that just the opposite is actually true. That's exactly what I need to do. I need to get myself to a meeting on a regular basis. Those who keep coming to our meetings regularly stay clean. Very simple. It's a very simple program. I have found it to be a very simple program. I just need to follow these instructions. I've kept a sponsor throughout. I've had two sponsors in the time. I had one for about 3 years and one for about the last 5 years. And, we celebrate anniversaries, That's important, too. That gives us an indication that this continues to work and that we're excited about being clean. I love having clean time, and I got 3,250 days clean. I did the thing downstairs today. I said, well, I can't be right. And I thought, that doesn't add up. But, the computer said it was, so it must be right. So that's where the assumption that the person entering it in entered the numbers incorrectly, But I have trust in the process today. I'll go ahead and believe that it's probably right. And, it is right. Excuse me, it is right. But that is truly a miracle, I've been very fortunate to not have to suffer through the relapse and come back. And I don't know that I could. And I don't want to find out. I truly don't want to find out. I've been very lucky to stay here, to stay on the path, to, remain in service, to have a home group. I'm going to celebrate an anniversary next month and let the other people know that. And there's a few other people in that meeting that celebrate with me usually every year. One of them has 10 years more than I do. And we've done it every year. We have the same home group, and he had his 11th when I had my first, and it's really cool. And I look forward to that. And when I look at the people, and we'll find out more tomorrow night, but when I got here, there were not very many people that had more than 10 years. There were some, but now, I've been hearing them announced. People are celebrating 18, 19, 20 years. People, and I'm thinking, God, you only had 5 years when I got here? God, you got 15 now. Guy sitting right over there. Guy sitting right back there got 11. Bunch of people around here got a whole bunch of time. Some people, seems like they just got here yesterday, and they got a year already. It's amazing. Where did the time go? And I'll tell you what my favorite thing is about this program, and I've said this for a long time. My single, most honest, truly favorite thing is to watch someone come in and watch them change, to see them come in here feeling like I felt on my first day, not wanting to be here, miserable, hate you people. I'm not like you at all. There's something wrong with you, and I'm not it. I have nothing to do with you people at all. I'm only here to get these people off my back. I came here to do that, really. But to watch somebody like that the next year have an anniversary, even sometimes in a few months, they sort of blossom. They wake up. The gain weight. Look at all the weight I've gained, The longer I'm clean, the fatter I am. And I feel all right. And my hair looks good, And my beard is getting grayer all the time. And I just can't get rid of this black that's up here in the mustache part, Because I turned 50 this past year. Imagine that. You know what? I thought I'd be dead way before 50. I had a 40th birthday party, and it was an exciting time, believe me. But I had a 50th birthday party this time. There was more people at this party, and everybody there was clean. There was one guy that I knew, and he came in, he says, there's no booze here. And he looked around, and he realized that these people, they're eating like crazy, but they were having a good time, and none of them were drinking. None of them were using. Nobody was running downstairs. Nobody was running out in the back. None of them had to do that. Because we have found that it is possible to associate with people and live and enjoy life without the use of drugs. And my excitement is, you know, is right here. The things that I liked doing before, I used to play music. I gave that up right away. First thing, no brainer, right? Got out of that. I love playing baseball. I played softball forever and ever. I love doing that. And I couldn't do it. I was trying to stay on this team, and I was in treatment and an outpatient, and had to go to meetings every night, and I just couldn't do it anymore. And I turned my stuff in, and I kind of gave that up. But then I found out that there's people who play softball in recovery. There's a league made up of people all in recovery, you know, from different little areas and clubhouses and groups that were sponsoring teams. And they come together on Sundays and they play. And I said, well, I can do that. So I got out there and I got involved and started coaching the team and then had to go get players and get people to come and join us. I found some people that play music. Some of them play softball and music. Imagine that. Here's some people who like to do two of the things that I like to do the most. They're clean, and they love doing it too. What's so hard about that? And these people, they're just like me. You know, they were not so square. They weren't already in recovery. They weren't a drag. You know, they didn't live these crummy lives. They lived the same wild and exciting life that I used to do, driving the wrong way in the highway in Ocean City. You know, getting lost, getting my car stuck in the mud, tripping, you know, all this kind of stuff. Just all these wonderful adventures. You know, but they were here too. Well, I might as well hook up with these people. You know, I might as well get with them. I might as well go to meetings together. We can make an event out of a meeting. We can go to dinner first and then go to a meeting and then go eat again, you know, because some other people wanted to go out afterwards. Well, I already ate. And they say, well, so did I, but I'll go for dessert, you know. All right. See? But I'm able to exercise a little bit. It's too windy to run on the beach today, though. That sand will just kill you. Maybe tomorrow morning it'll be a little calmer out there. No swimming out there. It looks pretty dangerous. But, I'm not much for going into the water sports or getting out in the water too much. But some people have helped to break me of that fear, too, thanks to this program and the people in it. I think they're really sadistic, though, but they... but they would probably throw me a life raft, you know, if I fell out of the boat or anything. But I guess I could trust them to do that for me today. But we really do have a lot of fun, you know. There's a lot of aspects to this program, you know. It's a 12-step program. I make it mandatory for my sponsees to memorize the 12 steps. It takes some of them a little longer than others, but this is a 12-step program. You should at least know what the 12 steps are. You should start to learn what some of the principles are that are associated with each one of those 12 steps. And you should attend meetings on a regular basis and help a newcomer and get some phone numbers and call some people and try and get some help. It's also, you know, a society. We talk about a society and a fellowship. And the fellowship is fun. I didn't come here to be miserable. I didn't come here to have no life. You know, when I first thought I was sentenced, this was a sentence. This was my new prison. My old prison was in the basement in my house, in the back, all the way around the corner, where I couldn't move. And I jumped every time some floor creaked or whatever. That was my old prison, you know. I did not want to come in here and be miserable the same way. You know, I thought, why? You know, I might as well use. You know, then I could end it faster. It would soon be over. You know, but now my desires are to stay clean, to have a good time. I've always been a fun person, you know. So we can make meetings fun. There's some meetings that we go to, and all I do is laugh. There are certain people that I cannot make eye contact with at a meeting because I'll start laughing. And somebody else might be sharing some pretty serious stuff, you know. They got some stuff going on, and I don't want to be a jackass, you know. But sometimes I can't help it. So I'll put my head down and pretend I'm praying. And really what I'm doing is deliberately not making eye contact so that I won't ruin the atmosphere of recovery at a particular meeting. So I can do that here, and I feel real good about that. But the fellowship is a real important part, you know. We come to these conventions to celebrate our recovery, our newfound freedom, you know, ability to meet new people. In my phone book, in my pocket, I have phone numbers from people all over the country. I know somebody from Pittsburgh now, look. They come from all over the place, you know. And I'll get your phone number before I go. I was in Pittsburgh last summer, as a matter of fact, at the new baseball stadium, PNC Park. And I was at RFK last night for the Washington Nationals home opener. Really cool. When I was with two other people that are in recovery. And that's something we can do, you know. It was not a financial burden to be able to do that. And I was there. And with my binoculars, I could spot not only the president, but two other recovering addicts that were sitting in the section down below us. That we had a conversation on the phone, and I knew they were going to be there. And I could see him down there, and there he was, sure enough. And he's a small guy, too. And I picked him out of a crowd of 46,000 people. And we were able to, you know, enjoy that together, sort of. But I like having fun here. You know, the fellowship is a real important thing for me. And I can be serious when I need to be serious. And I can be, you know, bullheaded when I need to be bullheaded. And I can be self-centered sometimes, you know. And I'm able to look at those things. And I'm able to work the steps. I'm able to help others work the steps and work along, go along the journey together and really enjoy it. And I don't know. I'm here to have some fun this weekend. I'm on vacation. I put this time off, last night's baseball game, this convention this weekend, and I've taken off all next week, and I have an opportunity to go traveling, and I'm going to go visit some relatives a long distance away, and it's a great time for me. I needed to get out of work for a little while. I like to take a spring vacation, and last year I took a spring break with my daughter that's in college, and we went to Florida together. Sometimes we do some family things together with wife and kids. Kids are getting a little bit older and sort of have some other ideas in mind and want to go their own way. My wife took off with one of them before, and I have this opportunity, and she gave me a kiss goodbye and said, have a good time. Kind of laughed at the way I pack. You know, I pack days in advance, and I have a new my suitcase for this weekend, and I have a big suitcase for next week. I had everything was packed, you know, last Sunday. And it's, I guess, because I was so anxious and to be out of work, you know. I've worked at the same place for a very long time. I have 32 years of service in one place, and that's truly a miracle. A lot of my aggravation comes from the adversarial people that I come across in my job. And this program, the principles that I try to practice on a regular basis, help me immeasurably. I'm faced with people that I think were put on this earth deliberately to mess with me, deliberately to make my life miserable. And God, why do you do this to me? You know, well, it's an opportunity for growth. And how am I going to get through this? You know, I have my friend over there who's a punching bag. I have my sponsor who he says, you got to stop it. You got to stop it. Just stop it. And I have a sponsee called me yesterday with exactly the same problem. What do I do? And I said, well, here's what I did. You mean you had the same problem? I said, he didn't know about all that. And he was having the same problem with the same kind of person, probably the same guy for all I know. Same person, you know, same personality, whatever, you know. And we are very much alike, those of us that are in this program. And these people who mess with us are probably very much alike. And I said, this guy's probably like, you know, what I just went through. And here's what I did. And here's how I handled it. And I tried very hard to get this guy out. I ratted him out. I busted him out to the boss. I pointed out every mistake he made. I had direct confrontations. I flexed my seniority muscle all over him and all that kind of stuff. And it just got worse. It just got worse. And then I said, you know what? I'm through. I can't do this anymore. This is too much aggravation. This is too much effort. And I would go home from work sick, physically sick. Sick to my stomach, a pounding headache that no Excedrin would be able to get rid of, and I'd still have to come back and face that same guy the next day. And I said, that's it, I'm done. I prayed. I prayed that this person will find some peace. I prayed that this person would leave me be and that I would get some kind of relief from all of this. And it wasn't 3 days. This is going on for a year and a half. It wasn't 2 days later, 3 days later, the boss came to me and said that this person is no longer with us. And the minute I stopped, the minute I let it go, the minute I turned it over, the minute I started to practice some of what I preach in this program and everything that I've learned in this program, the minute I did that, it was over. It was gone. So he left and got a new job someplace else, and he got a new job in the neighborhood that I live in. I work 5 miles from where I live, and there is a business just like the one that I work in right around the corner from where I live, and wouldn't you know it, I was going to the bank the other day to get some money to come here, and who do I see passing right by me? I thought, oh, my God. Well, I didn't ask God specifically, you know, to get him out of my life and send him back to Pennsylvania from where he came from, but at least I don't have to face him every day. But I have that reminder because when I drive by there, I see his car in the parking lot of where he works now. I know the how I'm going to handle it. I know that this may come up again, that it's still there. It's just like my disease that's outside waiting for me to give it the chance to come on back. That is an opportunity for my character defects to come up and bite me in the ass again. Anytime I want it, I can get some free pain delivered right back. Another opportunity for growth, you know. So anyway, I think that we're just about to wrap this up. I'm grateful to the program and Narcotics Anonymous. My recovery is 100% in this fellowship. Everything I need is in here. I relate to the literature. I relate to the people in here. And I'm real glad to be alive. I am truly glad to be alive. And I read the obituaries on a regular basis, and my name hasn't been in there yet. And that's good news. That's real good news because this disease will kill me anytime I think that I can get away with it. Many of the things that didn't happen to me before, jails, institutions, death, all of that can come back to me. And I get little glimpses of it when I start to act up like I do sometimes. And when I get, you know, I get this little reminder that if I think that I can go use safely one more time, even though my record tells me that you can't, you tried it, you did your best, and you failed. It's over. Surrender. And give it up. So just for today, I'm going to stay clean, and I'm going to enjoy life, and I'm going to share it with the other people that have also learned how to live life and enjoy it without using drugs. Just for today. Thank you.
Thanks for sharing.